Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This episode is in partnership with Gloss Genius. Made for salons and spas, Gloss Genius is the only business management and payments platform that makes it easy to grow revenue and enhance the client experience, which we are all about here on The Treatment Room. From a beautiful online booking site to powerful marketing tools and low payment processing rates, Gloss Genius empowers you to run your full salon or spa in a stylish and smart way while feeling supported at every step. For 50% off for 2 months, go to glossgenius.com/signup and enter code TTRSPRING or check the show notes for details. Now let's get back to the show. Hello, guys. Welcome back to the Treatment Room podcast. I am your host, Tessa Zolli, here with my good friend and mentor, Michelle Fallon, founder of Concepts Institute. Welcome back to the show, Michelle.
Thank you so much, Tess. It's good to be back here again.
Great to be here with you too. I know we've done many, many episodes, so we always love having you back. And I think I did tell you that the number one episode I have on the podcast is your skincare ingredients episode.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Ingredients is such a big thing. Wow. That's wonderful. I'm so glad that everyone's interested in learning about ingredients that they could take care of, you know, their client's skin better and have a better understanding of the different products. So that is excellent.
Yes, you are a wealth of knowledge, Michelle. And for anybody who hasn't listened to the previous episodes and who maybe doesn't know you yet, do you want to tell us a little bit about you and your experience?
Yes, absolutely. I would love to. So let's see. So I've been in this industry about 35 years. When I started as an esthetician in California way back in the mid-1980s, there was no such thing as an esthetician license. We were all cosmeticians and then grandfathered in with the induction of the esthetician license in 1990. So I've been licensed a really long time. Most of my clients go back, you know, with me back to the 80s. And I also teach, of course, you know, the founder and one of the, the clinical aesthetics teacher at Concepts Institute of Advanced Aesthetics. But I've taught, you know, on every level from state board through Sedesco International. I teach all of the paramedical, or I should say half of the paramedical, Dr. Bradley Green, our medical director, teaches the other half. And I teach all of the clinical aesthetics phase of our program at Concepts Institute. I do a lot of writing for, you know, international trade journals like Skin Inc., Skin Deep, Dermascope. I've also contributed to a couple of books, the Outstanding Aesthetics books. My chapter was paramedical aesthetics in one of the books, the first edition, and then lymphatic drainage, manual facial lymphatic drainage in the second edition. And I do a lot of business consulting. I also have a degree in business, so I do a lot of business consulting for estheticians and nurses who want to get into the aesthetics industry, medical aesthetics industry, and need either some quick tips or, thorough advice, either way. So yeah, I've been in this industry and kind of worn all hats for a really long time.
Yeah, and as you guys can probably tell, Michelle is so kind and humble and, you know, very nurturing, but she is a powerhouse in this industry and so intelligent. I look up to her so much. Her books amazing. I have them on my Amazon storefront, but those were some of the first books I read when I was just getting into aesthetics, and I still refer back to them to this day. And your classes have just been so foundational in terms of my education, and
The question I get a lot is, what books do I recommend? What courses? And I'm always referring back to Michelle because she has truly taught me so, so much. And as we know, esthetician school is more of the basics. It's the foundation. But I'm so grateful I started taking some of Michelle's classes about midway through my esthetician experience. And I feel like that really kind of gave me that leg up. So I can't say enough good things about Michelle.
Thank you so much, Tess. Yes. And you're doing wonderful things too. You're out there and you're educating the estheticians as well as the public on all of these new techniques and, you know, skincare procedures and ingredients and all of these wonderful things that come into the industry. And I hear from, you know, esthetician students and estheticians alike, you know, how grateful they are to have this podcast that they can refer back to. And they really look forward to, you know, everything that you do.
That's so sweet. Thank you. That means so much to me. And yeah, I'm just so grateful for our relationship and for knowing you. And I just think it's amazing people can have access to your courses, and it's really a way to expand your knowledge. So we love Michelle. We are so grateful for you. And today we're going to have a conversation about rosacea, which was the most requested topic on Instagram. I asked you guys over there what you would like Michelle to speak on today, and everyone, for the most part, said rosacea. So Michelle, would you mind telling us a little bit about this condition? It is a little bit mysterious, but what are some of the findings that we do know about rosacea?
Yes, and great topic. And it is so mysterious. You know, we were just talking earlier, right, Tess, about rosacea and what we know today versus about rosacea versus what we knew 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 or 20 years ago. And we are learning a lot, but it's still so idiopathic. Right? Meaning that the doctors, when they say idiopathic, it's just, they don't know a lot about it, the pathology. There's a lot of, you know, hypothesis, but still it is a little confusing. So rosacea, or they used to call it acne rosacea, now they call it mostly rosacea, is an inflammatory condition of the capillaries, you know, the vascular system, especially of the capillaries of the skin. The facial skin mostly. And as you all probably know, it's kind of that butterfly effect that you get on the skin, where the skin is really pink in that particular, those particular areas. It is where the capillary is actually inflamed. A lot of the doctors and scientists feel that it is just like some of the other autoimmune, you know, diseases and disorders, that it is probably an autoimmune disorder or an autoimmune condition, which, if you're not familiar with autoimmune, it's where the immune system actually attacks itself, right? It doesn't recognize itself as self and turns on itself. And that can cause inflammation, you know, when your white blood cells, when your immune system is fighting itself. So why that happens, and I've asked many dermatologists, many doctors, they really don't know. They don't know what the cause is. There is some speculation, you know, is it the Demodex mite, which lives in and on the skin and eats dead skin cells? And we know we all have Demodex mites, though. So, you know, that is just sort of one theory. You know, is it autoimmune? Probably. People who have autoimmune disorders are more prone to it. Whether it be skin lupus or thyroid or other conditions like that. But it's definitely characterized by a lot of redness on the skin, a lot of heat. Heat is the big thing. So if the skin is just a little red every now and again, maybe a little erythema, that's one thing. But if the skin is red and it's hot most of the time, even when you come kind of close to the facial area, you're feeling that heat even before you touch the face. You see the little dilated capillaries, you know, they just don't go away. They're, you know, it's chronic. Sometimes it could even be coupled with pustules and sebaceous cysts. Not always. That would be more of a, you know, a grade two, the papular pustular rosacea, instead of just the erythema type of rosacea. But yeah, that is sort of the way that rosacea looks. So as far as the, you know, the cause, there's a lot of opinions.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we were talking to Tess, and I'm sure you talked to your followers about, you know, we were discussing rosacea.
Yeah.
You know, the condition that you have,
yeah.
Yes. Mild condition.
Yes. Yes. So, and I've shared a little bit about this, but just imagine my surprise as somebody who has studied rosacea. I've always been very fascinated by it. I actually didn't learn much about it in school. It was when I started actually working with clients and, you know, seeing a lot of the signs and having clients tell me they'd been diagnosed with it. So I became very familiar with the treatment options and the condition, but imagine my surprise. Here I am, 31 years old. I was recently diagnosed with rosacea myself. And this is something that's very common with rosacea sufferers. It can, and most commonly does occur later in life. It's very common amongst women. It tends to be more severe in the men who do get it, but it often does happen later in life. Kids can have rosacea, but that's more rare. So like Michelle said, there are all these theories, nothing definitive, mm-hmm. but these theories about why rosacea can develop. Sun exposure is also another one. A lot of
a trigger, right?
Derms will say that's a trigger. Yep. And it has to
doctors
do with that.
Doctors often feel that it is, you know, it's atopic. It mm-hmm. runs, it could potentially run in families, especially people or families who are prone to autoimmune disorders.
Yes.
And like you say, you know, Tess, it's more predominantly in women. Fitzpatrick type 1, 2, or 3, but it could be in 4, 5s and
yes.
6 as well. And usually becomes a little bit more severe in your 20s and 30s and kind of hits a ceiling in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
There are treatments, but unfortunately right now there's really no cure. But as you know, we can keep it under control utilizing certain treatments. Doctors prescribe certain medications. Laser can help. I mean, laser is interesting. It's something that may help to diffuse it a little bit or get rid of it so it looks like it's gone for a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And then several years later, because it is inflammatory, right, and the inflammatory mediators are still there in the skin, it can cause more redness again. So another cycle of laser several years after the first application.
Yes, and we're definitely going to get into a lot of the follower questions that were submitted over on my Instagram, but lasers were a popular thing that kept coming up. And so we did have some questions about lasers, Michelle, including, can you get lasers with rosacea? Does IPL help with rosacea? Which lasers do you think are the most helpful, and are there any that somebody should avoid?
So that is a really good question. And it can be so confusing because there are different types of lasers in terms of what they're geared for, in terms of what they can do. So let's start really quickly, if we can, test just with the different levels of rosacea, right? So we have erythema rosacea, which is a little bit of redness on the skin. It almost looks like it could just be cuprous, but a little bit more severe than just, you know, cuprous or telangiectasia. There's a lot of heat in the skin. I have a lot of clients who are diagnosed with that, level or stage of rosacea. And then we have papular pustular rosacea, where the skin has everything that erythema rosacea has, but now you're starting to see the papules and the pustules. And doctors feel that's because there's so much heat in the skin. There's just so much heat all the time in the skin. It can cause actually an inflammation of the hair follicle where you have actual breakouts, actual pustules and sebaceous cysts, which are just deeper pustules. And or you could have an inflammation of the sweat gland, almost like a prickly heat, you know, a little itchy, a little, you know, those little bumps on the skin that tend to be a little more watery inside. And that is a little bit harder to treat. I typically will refer the patient over to the doctor for medication at that point. And then we have level three or stage or grade three, which is the fematose rosacea, you know, the really big kind of fleshy nose.
Yeah.
Sometimes patients will have this without having the, you know, a lot of redness. There'll always be some redness, but maybe not so many pustules or papules, but they'll have the big fleshy nose. Mm-hmm. I should say fleshy, not fleshy, fleshy and fleshy. And the reason for that is because there's so much fluid, right? There's so much blood in the tissue and lymph in the tissue that it actually tends to stretch the tissue, and the tissue becomes enlarged and the skin becomes enlarged. So doctors can go in and use electrotherapy or sometimes lasers on that. And then of course there's ocular rosacea, where the whites
so
of
much
the
fun.
Eyes. Yeah, I was saying, you know, it's never fun, but you know, these are things that we see as estheticians, just like with nurses and doctors. Of course, this is what we have to refer over to the physician. Mm-hmm. But so I just kind of wanted to give you an idea of the different, you know, grades of rosacea.
Yeah.
And then we were going to talk now more about lasers. Right, okay. Tess? Sorry, I got off the track a
no,
little.
No. You, that was smart. I think it's good to specify there are different types and levels and different things to watch for, like that heat, or if it's affecting your eyes, or if you notice that thickened skin.
Exactly. And if it's, and it's so confusing, I have so many people come in and think, oh, I've got rosacea, and it may just be a little cuprose. But if you're feeling that constant heat coming from the skin, then, you know, potentially it is grade one, or sometimes they call it stage one. So it's good to refer to the physician for a diagnosis for your patient.
And I'll say for me, Michelle, I think mine, I've seen you for many facials, and I think I've always just had that cuprous skin, and it wasn't until recently it did develop into the official diagnosis of rosacea.
Right. So you started to feel more heat, maybe some discomfort, a little itching, Tessa? You did.
Yeah. Okay. For me, it was really intense burning and just so much heat. And primarily you'll see rosacea in the T-zone, but Michelle, do you ever see it elsewhere? Do you ever see it all over?
You know, I have in the really severe cases, a lot of patients who have fematose or rhinophema, you know, they have a lot of redness throughout the facial area, sometimes even in the jawline, the submental under the chin, and even into the neck a little bit. Not
That's what
as,
I had.
Badly, but yes, yes. But a lot of heat comes from the area.
Yeah.
And so you know that the capillaries are inflamed, and you know that the white blood cells there are, you know, they're wreaking havoc on the capillaries.
Totally.
And so we'll get into maybe later we could talk a little bit about diet and vitamins.
Mm-hmm. Sure. That sounds great. Okay. So we digress a little
laser.
Bit. But yeah. Back to lasers. These can be so helpful. I have seen my derm for a few laser treatments. She really prefers V-beam for me. And I'm curious, how does that compare to the other lasers that you see doctors that you work with, like Dr. Green recommending?
Yes, so I do work with Dr. Green. He is our medical director for our training facility. But he uses the 532 nanometer. So I know there's so many different names of lasers, like there's so many different names of cars, you know. So I'm not sure the exact manufacturer that he uses or the company he uses, but the 532, if you were to slow down the laser as far as, you know, when lasers, light therapy comes from its source, it's moving so quickly, so you can't really see the color. But if you were to slow it down, the color would be kind of green. That's why we also use green LED to help with rosacea. But this particular nanometer will resonate with the oxyhemoglobin in the capillary, and it will actually help to shrink the capillary. And then the body just go ahead, you know, will go ahead and assimilate that. So if it shrinks down the capillary in those areas, not all of them, of course, but some of them, then the skin becomes a lot less red. I know you had, or someone had asked about IPL, which is sort of a broadband. So with IPL, you can put a filter in and you can get the 500 nanometer spectrum, or sometimes they'll use the nanometers from 400 all the way up to about 600, which is, you know, the if you were to slow again the light down, you know, you would see blue, green, yellow, red. So it's not as targeted that way. It's kind of a hit or miss. So I know Dr. Green says that, you know, IPL is okay, and you may have a good reaction. You know, you may have some lightening of the rosacea, but the 532, I think it was, 532 beam works really well, and it's super hyper-focused on the capillaries and then shrinking the capillaries down. So the redness really does clear, at least for a couple of years.
Yeah, and here's something I have observed too, Michelle. I'm curious if you agree, but I really think the technician or the person behind the laser is also something to really consider, because, you know, there are lots of different types of facilities you can get a laser treatment, from very shady facilities 100%. To the best dermatologists. So I think it can also really that can matter too.
Lot of it depends on the user, because you have these great machines. I have people come in all the time with these great machines of all sorts and say, it's just not working.
Right.
And then you find out, you're like, you know, what are you doing? How are you using it? What type of skin are you using it for? You know, what are your goals? So there's a lot more than just having like this wonderful piece of equipment, but you really have to know the physiology, anatomy of the skin, and, you know, what the client's goals are and what this modality can do and how to use it correctly. So you're 100% right, Tess, on that.
Okay, good.
Sure.
Yeah. And similarly, I didn't run this by you before, Michelle, but I'm just curious off the top of your head, do you have any opinion on microneedling for those with rosacea?
Good question. And we just had a microneedling class yesterday.
Okay.
A Zoom-based class yesterday. Yes, so if the microneedling is very mild, and you're trying to treat something other than rosacea, so microneedling wouldn't be used specifically for rosacea. Would it make it better? Probably not. Could it make it worse? Mm-hmm. Possibly. Yeah. Maybe not, but possibly. But let's just say you're treating like dermal atrophy, which is the craters in the skin post acne, or you know, lines or wrinkles or hyperpigmentation, which you can use microneedling for. If the rosacea is not very severe, it probably won't have a negative reaction on the rosacea, and it may help the other skin condition, but it generally is not for, you know, the treatment of rosacea.
Right. And I think it can get tricky when you have a client who has both skin conditions. Maybe they have severe rosacea and they have acne scarring, divots, pitted scars, which I have definitely seen.
Exactly. And that gets so tricky, because if you know, depending upon what the client's goal is, and of course, if they have rosacea, first and foremost, you kind of have to keep that in mind and say, okay, you know, we're treating anti-aging, or we're treating dermal atrophy, or we're treating acne, other things, but the client also has rosacea. So there's certain treatments that we don't want to do with rosacea, like really, and I know you'll talk about this later, but really aggressive peels probably would not be the best thing. Like mild glycolic acid is fine, but aggressive peels could exacerbate it because it stimulates the actual capillary and brings too much blood into the capillary and could even cause sort of a, you know, distension of the capillary wall or even affect the little muscle in the capillary. So yeah, it is really important to have an understanding of, you know, what this particular machine you're using does right. on the skin, not just for, you know, whatever you're treating, but for the rosacea as well, if right. the patient has rosacea.
Yeah. And, you know, I think we want to remember at the end of the day, it is inflammation. And with inflammation, there is that opportunity for more bacteria, more pathogens. We have an already defective moisture barrier, which is so critical. So you definitely want to handle rosacea with care. And I think it's a really important point Michelle made about being cautious with chemical peels, being cautious with microneedling and even lasers, because these are more intensive treatments. And what I have learned from treating rosacea clients and from treating my own rosacea is also that there's a lot of nuance when we're treating this type of condition. It's definitely not like there's just one way to treat rosacea, or when you're looking at a rosacea client, it's not like a one size fits all. Everyone has the same
exactly.
tolerance level. You're still treating the skin type and you're treating rosacea. So what I think I've realized is it's not always a matter of this ingredient can't be used at all, or this peel can't be used at all, but it needs to be a step up approach. You definitely want to take those baby steps with rosacea. The prep is so important in strengthening the skin, just like working out. You want to build slowly, and keep in mind there are some limitations. Those deeper chemical peels, those more aggressive treatments are probably not best, and there is a point of mm-hmm. diminishing return.
Exactly right. And when you know, you look at someone with rosacea, I know a lot of people feel, well, I'll just apply a cold compress, or I'll mm-hmm. apply some ice. Well, what mm-hmm. that does temporarily is it will contract the capillary, and yes, it will look better temporarily, but guess what? A couple of minutes later, the capillary will go back to the way it was, and blood will be engorged in that dilated capillary, and that is what creates that redness on the skin.
Yep.
I always, and you've probably heard me say this before, Tess, is the supplement. It's an internal supplement. It's a vitamin, water-soluble vitamin. But going just to the health food store, or sometimes I just send my clients to Trader Joe's and get the Synergistic C, mm-hmm. but it contains 500 milligrams of vitamin C together with 250 milligrams of bioflavonoids.
Yes.
And together, coupled together, they're amazing. You know, they're an antioxidant, anti-inflammatory, even a natural antihistamine.
Mm.
And they also help to strengthen the little tunica media, which is the little teeny tiny muscle in the capillary. So it helps it to contract a little bit, so it's not so red anymore. And, you know, it's so interesting when I tell my clients, I just go to, you know, the health food store and buy this supplement, or go to Trader Joe's and they use it for like a month or two. They're like, it's amazing. How could two little vitamins do so much? Like, how is this
right.
able right. to, you know, lessen the severity and the redness and the heat? And sometimes doctors, especially, you know, and I'm not all doctors, naturopath doctors are really for it. Sometimes MDs are even shocked that the vitamin combination works so well.
Makes sense to me, strengthening the skin and the capillaries from the inside out. I got to remember to take that supplement.
Yeah, so you definitely want to give it a shot, maybe, Tess, and do some before and after, you know, after like 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, so you could show us how, you know, your skin is progressing in terms of the erythema. And is it really bringing down the heat and the inflammation and the discomfort and making it look and feel a lot better?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, rosacea is really, really tricky, and it can really, I think this is also important to mention, affect your mental health, because it's a physical sensation. It's not just vanity or superficial. It can get really painful. So yeah, it's important to kind of look at it from all angles and seek medical care when needed. And especially if you're starting to feel those more painful sensations like I have been, it's important to also check in with the doctor and also know it's not necessarily something you are doing wrong. I think it's so important to have home care. I think that's going to be 80% of the equation, as well as keeping in mind lifestyle triggers, especially heat or extreme cold. We want to avoid those extremes. Like Michelle pointed out, you wouldn't just want to put ice on rosacea. It's about those more mild treatments.
Right. And sugar too. We really need to be careful with glycation, because with the sugar and the way that sugar causes inflammation in the body in general, I've noticed with a lot of the doctor's patients and my own clients that when patients give up a lot of their simple carbs and not so good carbs, like the cookies and candies and cakes and things, not the good carbs. I mean, complex carbs like fruit and veggies, you could keep those, right? You need that.
Good energy.
But the simple carbs, the way that they break down in the body and the way that they don't break down in the body properly, can cause a lot of glycation, which leads to inflammation, which, of course, leads to pain and redness and just, a lot of discomfort. So cutting back on the simple carbs, super important. Eating foods that are really rich in chlorophyll, like the green foods, broccoli, spinach, all of the green foods, very, very anti-inflammatory, really, really good. Of course, drinking lots of water just to kind of help flush the body and restabilize and hydrate, which is super important, right? Because we're mainly water. So you've got to kind of, fill up that water, that reservoir.
Yes.
But those are things to remember as well.
And I think two of the big triggers my clients always notice are, of course, spicy foods and alcohol.
Yes. Spicy foods with all of their polyphenols really can cause the vascular system to kind of shoot up, right? Stimulate. It stimulates everything. Mm-hmm. So that can cause the skin to become really hot and red. And yes, the same with alcohol. Alcohol will dilate the vessels. Yeah. Whereas, smoking like cigarettes and other tobacco type product will cause kind of a contraction of the vessel and then a dilation of the vessel. Contraction, dilation, contraction, dilation. And that's not good. Well, the alcohol causes that dilation and dehydration and vitamin depletion and a whole lot, a plethora of other things that are not so great too if you overdo it.
Yeah, no, it's really like it's a different lifestyle once you have rosacea. And I think that's something I just want to say, like, it is going to be a little bit of a different life. You do have to make some adjustments.
Maybe, and some sacrifices.
Yeah, no, it's just it's the truth. I think, if you're somebody who loves to run outside or go to hot yoga, it's difficult to do that with rosacea. And I mean, I'm not perfect. I really like hot sauce and spicy food, and I get tempted. I'll be like, let me just try this hot sauce and see if I really have rosacea. Of course I do. And it never ends well.
And then you're like, right. Yeah. Red and
why did I do this? Yeah.
Well, I mean, we're human, right? We're human. So, and it's hard to just stay on this really strict diet. But if you can just cut back, some of those things, like that excessive simple carb intake or junk food intake, add more green leafy vegetables, broccoli and other things like that to your diet. Increase your water intake with electrolytes. And then use products like with ingredients. I know we were going to talk about some of the ingredients that are kind of anti-inflammatory that you could use, that you could find in like creams and serums, like beta-glucan, which is great ingredient, very anti-inflammatory. You can find beta-glucan actually in oats, right? You can make like an oatmeal mask. Some people like to use a little bit of azelaic acid. If that's too stimulating, you want to find it in like a really low percentage.
I just wanted to share a quick story on that, Michelle. Okay, because you hear, I think this is an example of the nuance with rosacea, because you hear azelaic acid, you hear mandelic acid. These are like the gold standards for rosacea, right? But what Michelle just said is you have to consider the percentage and the strength of the product. I was doing great, Michelle, and I was sent some mandelic acid from a really great skincare brand we all know. And I was so excited to try it because I hear such great things about this serum. I have never had a reaction like this where, it was bad. Everything completely blew up and I had to reach out to my derm, and I ended up having a lot of peeling as well, along with just like persistent burning. And
And I bet it took about a week or two to go back to normal.
Sure, it did.
Does.
And I was going to a wedding too. But yeah, I think that's just important to know. Everything's not created equal. So be really cautious. If you've never tried it, try it on a small section of the face or a small section of your client's skin and make sure they're really prepped and start low and slow. Sorry, Michelle.
That is such good advice. Yeah, because you know what works for one person or one person's disorder or condition, it may not work for everyone. You may have other things going on in your body or with your skin. So that's exactly right. The lowest percentage possible, even with niacinamide, you know, that can help to flush the capillaries, which reduces redness in some people. Yeah. And then other people, they're like, oh my God, I'm as red as a tomato, a nightmare. So low percentage of these ingredients. Even some essential oils, which are known to be calming and soothing, like lavender or chamomile, you still need to be careful. Some people have a reaction to other constituents in them. Most of the time, if it's, you know, at the bottom of the ingredient label, you still want to test it. You still need to test it. Aloe vera, which is like 99.5% water and the other 0.5% is made up of like some 20 amino acids. For most people, it's okay, but you've got to see if there's anything else in that product that might be a little bit stimulating, you know, like really aggressive, strong BHAs or really aggressive, strong retinols or AHAs. Not the best thing, but then people feel like, oh, I can't use any alpha hydroxy acid or any retinol. Not exactly true.
Right.
It's all in the composition of the product, right, Tess? And how high or low the percentage is. You want to start low. You want to start low, and then you can work on it for like a month or so.
Yeah, test it out before you put it all over. The dose really makes the poison, and there are definitely great ingredients and ways to treat the skin while managing rosacea. That was another question. How can I address anti-aging with somebody who has rosacea?
Yeah, that also is a good question, because you're thinking, well, the client, you know, is starting to have drier skin, right, as they get older, so they need more lubrication of natural oils and also water-loving ingredients, because we become more dehydrated as we get older. So you want to look for ingredients like hyaluronic acid for the hydration, probably some natural oils for the extra lubrication, unsaturated fatty oils, you know, could be argan oil, could be coconut oil, jojoba oil, things like that. Not a lot, just a very small amount on that ingredient label. But then you're also thinking, I want to treat the lines and the wrinkles and the flaccidity. Maybe they're having some muscle sagging. The good news is, even with microcurrent, which I use a lot for my clients and the patients, and also teach microcurrent, can be used over rosacea if done really, really carefully. And microcurrent, as we know, right, stimulates fibroblasts to produce more collagen, elastin, and glycosaminoglycans, and also helps to tone the muscles. But it can be used very carefully over rosacea. You can use things for product penetration, like cosmetic ultrasound, if you're careful over rosacea. You can do certain massages, like an acupressure, you know, massage, or a lymphatic drainage massage over rosacea. A lot of the products, as long as they are not overly stimulating, I mean, even peels, like a gentle, not highly acidic glycolic peel over rosacea. Now, I probably wouldn't use an aggressive TCA or Jesner's, right?
Right.
Or an aggressive salicylic acid. But glycolic acid's fine. A low glycolic, you know, low dose,
actually
not high in acidity. Yes, very, very much so. Could be very helpful. Could help to strengthen the skin. It could help to flush that stagnant blood through. Glycolic acid is actually anti-inflammatory. So it's got some good properties there. Glycolic is one that I'll even sell, you know, to the client, as long as it's not too strong.
Yes, that's the key. Yes, I actually really love glycolic acid for rosacea, and it provides a nice anti-aging benefit, can even benefit acne by loosening that cellular glue. And we did mention the Demodex mite theory a little bit earlier, and we do know that Demodex mite, it feeds off sebum, and that's what can heat the skin up really hot to even 99 degrees Fahrenheit. So removing that sebum is actually really important. And I feel like in the, I'll say, over-the-counter world, or just consumer marketing of skincare, this picture of rosacea I see all the time is soothing, you know, calming, sensitive skin. And those are definitely components of rosacea. But I feel rosacea is not fully managed and not fully treated without some exfoliation. And there is that healthy component of exfoliation that, again, is not overdoing it, but removing that lipase enzyme and offering, again, controlled, gentle exfoliation. So light AHAs and BHAs, enzymes are great. Or
absolutely. Yes.
Alpha hydroxy acids, glycolic, lactic, at those lower percentages, and maybe working up to more over time.
Right. Ascorbic acid, tartaric acid, all of those AHAs that you can use. And again, if, you know, if it's a newer client, if they're not used to skincare, they haven't used these products before, always think less is more, right? We're going to start out really light and gentle, and then we can work up to using something a little bit stronger or a little bit more often, and really sticking with the client. And it's not kind of a, and having them understand, it's not like a one and done, right? They don't just come in, you do one treatment, you sell them products, and they're good to go forever. No, it's a continuous management of the skin. You know, they want to come back every month to see you and use their products and eat healthfully and do all of those other things, all in combination.
Yeah.
It's synergistic.
Totally. And all of that said, I think also it's important to recognize you might still have flare-ups. You know, this is a chronic ongoing inflammatory condition. You could be doing everything right. You could have the best home care. You could be going in for treatments, and you could be eating very healthfully at home, and you could still get triggered. It's not a perfect world that we live in. So also understand there might be some little ups and downs.
And if you don't know what the trigger is, and normally even doctors may not know what that trigger is, you know, is it, you know, it could be triggered by a product. It could be triggered by stress.
Yeah,
stress is a really big one. It also affects cortisols and other hormones in the body. Sometimes medications can trigger it because it affects hormones in the body and the system overall. So it's really, you know, it really is not a one and done. And it's like Tess says, it's constant management. It may be going along for many weeks and months and even years. And then, bam, you know, it's like, wow, I have this redness and this heat and this sensitivity, what is causing this? Sometimes you can put your finger on it. Well, I was under a lot of stress, or I changed medication, I added birth control or took it away, or whatnot. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you can't. You just don't know, but you want to try and go back to, you know, the basics of eating healthfully, reducing the simple sugars, eating more green leafy vegetables, fresh fruit rather than, you know, other types of carbohydrates, you know, using products that can, has been known to help rosacea, you know, treating yourself well, taking time just to relax. Meditation is helpful.
Oh, yeah.
Massage, maybe not a lot of facial massage other than what we discussed, but body massage.
That's a good point, Michelle, about facial massage. How about, so as far as a facial, what things, I guess, on the client side and the esthetician side should people be wary of?
Yeah, so as far as being wary of, with a facial, I always think with rosacea, in my mind, it's like less is more. We're not going to overdo it, especially if this is your first time. You know, we're going to talk to you about diet and lifestyle, and we're going to talk to you about skincare products, but, you know, not really overstimulating. Instead of doing, let's say, a petrissage or an effleurage on the facial area, especially if it's very severe, maybe we'll do pressure points. Actually, I have a new facial massage that's just coming out. It's a hands-on massage. It's on pressure points and Le Papillon. Now, Le Papillon may not be the best for rosacea because it's a lot of butterfly tapping, but pressure points, and of course, you already know, Tess, that I teach lymphatic drainage. Excellent.
Phenomenal course with Michelle.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Really, really amazing.
And they come with really good, thorough, detailed demonstration videos that, you know, those you always keep, so you can always go back and practice with. But so that is really what you want to make sure of. Nothing overly, you know, stimulating. And in terms of just like a facial, if I can tell you, just sort of a basic treatment that I have done and do for my clients is when they come in, you know, we talk a little bit about what they're doing now and how the products are working or if they're not working. Taking a look at the ingredients that they're using, making sure that the ingredients are for rosacea, you know, they're not overly stimulating. And then starting with a really gentle cleanser, whether it be like a very gentle gel or a cream-based cleanser, just to kind of get the oil and debris and makeup off the skin, do a double cleansing, take a really good look at them underneath the magnification, you know, stretching the skin, asking questions. You know, if I see a lot of couperose in a certain area, do you feel a lot of heat coming from this area? They say yes. Do you feel a lot of discomfort coming from the area? You're going to take all these notes too. You want to keep really good notes. And I may not do a lot of extractions, but you can do a few extractions. I like to use either a bromelain or a papain enzyme to soften up the sebum. And it doesn't really strip the acid mantle too badly. You know, the barrier, it doesn't really affect negatively the barrier too badly.
Now, and Michelle, are you avoiding steam with rosacea clients?
Good question. If you do have someone whose rosacea is not too bad, you can use very light steam at kind of a distance with the enzyme or with the cleansing. I do it with the enzyme. But if there's a lot, if it is very severe, you know, if it's papular pustular rosacea, then I don't use steam. I use enzyme because we do want to remove the congestion gently. So I'll use an enzyme and keep that in most cases, depending upon your product line, right? You want to keep the enzyme damp or moist, so it's active. It's only active when it's moist. That's usually what the steam is for. And then just a little bit, and then do those very gentle removal of comedones. Or if you see pustules, very limited time though, only like 5 or 10 minutes. Even if you look at the skin and go, wow, they really need like a half an hour, don't do it. Mm-hmm. The skin will react, right? They'll have this purging after effect and it will be a lot worse than it needs to be afterwards. So it's better to have them come back in about 3 weeks.
Yes.
Than overdo extractions.
That's a great point, Michelle. And I think also mentioning why you're making that decision and setting the expectation with the client will save you because,
always.
You know, always, because sometimes yeah. people, I mean, a lot of people really feel like extractions are the main reason they want to get a facial. And
right.
they probably want it all gone when they leave. But if you explain why and you say that before you start, I think that's really helpful for kind of just, again, setting that expectation and also explaining mm-hmm. if there's certain areas you don't extract, why you're leaving it alone. So the client doesn't leave feeling like, oh, she just overlooked it or she was lazy.
Right.
I think that's important.
Or ripped
too.
Off.
Right. it's important with rosacea because these papules and pustules can present like acne, but there's no true blackhead or whitehead. There's no nucleus to extract with rosacea. So you might want to explain that, you know, certain raised areas or something that appears like acne should not be extracted. And your client should also know when they go home, it's not something to try to extract.
That is such a good point, because with those papules, a lot of them are not ripe and some of them are not true pustules pustules or sebaceous cysts. There are other lesions in the skin, you know, like I mentioned before, the sudoriferous gland, sweat gland produces a lot of water. So there are lots of little bumps in the skin that don't need extraction. So if they don't have a pussy whitehead, they're not ripe, you know, they don't look like a blackhead, they're not a blackhead, then you kind of want to just leave it alone. You could come in afterwards with either if you have blue LED or even green LED. Green LED is great because it will help treat both the redness, the erythema, and the acne as well. So will the blue. Blue is very similar.
You didn't mention red LED. Is there any reason why you feel it's not the best fit for rosacea?
So we're looking at the nanometers, which equals the length and the strength of the wave or the depth of the wave and what the wave, the light wave actually resonates within the tissue. And every light wave resonates with a different structure, cell, or protein. So the blue, being a little bit shorter, resonates with the porphyrin, which is inside bacteria, like staph bacteria or propionibacteria. And when it comes in contact with that porphyrin, it releases oxygen, which is excellent because we know that oxygen can help to stave off or even destroy the staph or the propionibacteria. That's why blue is so great for acne. And also the blue helps to kind of spread and diffuse and move along some of the stagnant blood in the capillaries. Now green does kind of the same thing, but green is also a little bit more geared for erythema. It really helps to stimulate that hemoglobin in the capillary and sort of push the stagnant blood along so it doesn't look so, you know, red and ruddy afterwards. The amber is similar to green if you have a amber LED, and the red's wavelength is longer than the rest, and it does a little bit of what all the other colors do. But its target, right, its sort of core is targeting the deeper tissue and the fibroblasts in the dermal layer of skin, which in return will stimulate collagen elastin and a constituent called glycosaminoglycans, which is, gives the skin its ability to hold on to water. So red is really, really good for anti-aging. It's okay for everything else, but it is actually best for anti-aging. But you can use it kind of as a weak substitute for, you know, anti-hyperpigmentation, rosacea, acne. I didn't mention hyperpigmentation in place of dilated capillaries accidentally. Did I, Tess? Did you catch me?
I don't think so.
Okay. I feel like, did I say hyperpigmentation? But anyway, hyperpigmentation is benefited by the green. It
okay.
really, you know, the green is very successful with hyperpigmentation, the green LED. And the green LED is very successful with cuprose too. with redness as well.
And now, speaking of hyperpigmentation, the last question I have here, which I feel like is so important, is about sunscreen. Do you feel there are certain qualities of a sunscreen that are beneficial for rosacea? Are there any that you feel should be avoided, or is there a certain SPF you think is appropriate for rosacea?
Yes, you know, sunblock, you know, sunscreen, generally, you know, we'll call a sunblock a screen that has titanium dioxide or zinc oxide in it, which is fine. It deflects light. Sometimes it can be a little congestive for people who have both rosacea and acne. Mm-hmm. And then you've got, of course, the chemical, right, screen. So we have benzophenone and octinoxate, which is usually okay most of the time. But I like to find sunblock or sunscreen that for rosacea, that contains a little bit of dimethicone or cyclomethicone or silicone in it, because it actually will help to suspend the ingredients. So the ingredients sit like right on the surface of the skin to block the sunlight instead of absorb into the skin and cause inflammation or irritation. Yeah. So yeah, that's what I do. I look for, you know, sunscreens and sunblocks that contain some dimethicone, especially for, you know, for acne or for rosacea.
That's a really, really interesting point. I've found as my condition has progressed, usually I do best with mineral. Glymed Plus does have a great one. It's their Photo Age SPF 30. It's the thicker, more emollient sunscreen. That's really kind of the only sunscreen with a chemical filter I do okay with. And when I do have the ocular rosacea flare-ups, it has to be mineral. And sometimes even that, depending on what's in there.
Is the powder test?
The powder?
You know, is that?
I do have a Color Science powder and a Is Clinical powder, which I do love. Those are great for touch-ups.
And it works well for you. And, you know, again, it's kind of one of those things, it's trial and, you know, trial and error, but trial and error, right? Because for some people, certain things work wonderfully. I know with me, I'm older now. I don't have as much acne anymore as I did back in the late 70s and the 80s. But I can still break out. So I find that if I wear really heavy duty physical blocks, that can break me out.
And oh, yeah.
Has like one of those, I call it cones, like dimethicone in it, which it suspends it and doesn't, and prevents it actually from congesting the follicles. But that's me. I've had other clients where it doesn't work so well. So it's kind of just testing things, and you know, whatever you test, you want them to test at least for a month or so to really get a good idea, unless they have a terrible, you know, immediate reaction to it.
Yeah. And I think a good point there too is you never really want anything comedogenic with rosacea. You don't want to, it's like, as my derm puts it, it's like putting a roof over the Demodex mite's head. It's like tucking him in a little blanket if you have too much occlusion. And of course, you don't want to have acne breakouts either. So I prefer to stick with the more clinical lines simply because I know they're being used on these intense inflammatory conditions like acne and rosacea. I know they're designed for that setting, so I feel I have more peace of mind. So I like a really high quality, broad spectrum, non-comedogenic sunscreen, but also, of course, keeping your skin type in mind is always going to be important.
Exactly. And the silicone-based products are actually breathable. So even though the skin sweats and the skin, you know, secretes oil, it excretes sweat, it's kind of breathable. So if you were to look at it under a microscope, it would look like this sheet with little teeny tiny holes in it. So it could still, you know, allow the skin to secrete or excrete. But yeah, like Tess says, it's so important to find what's right for you. And there are some product lines out there like what you have, tests that are geared for rosacea that have been tested over a long period of time and that most people with rosacea do really well with.
Yes. And I know Jan Marini also agrees with you on dimethicone. She likes to use them in her sunscreens. And I do really like her physical mineral SPF, both the tinted and the non-tinted. Those have dimethicone. And yeah, they're really excellent too.
Yeah, there's so many out there, and you really just have to check it out. We wish we could say that, you know, one size fits all, that this is for acne, or this is for rosacea, or this is for anti-aging, and this is all you need. You're good to go. Right. But no, it's really sort of, you know, it is with your client, you know, being a detective and figuring out what, you know, they're doing and what they're using and their lifestyle, and sometimes even going way back, you know, to their childhood, and then kind of working forward and finding things that you feel, you know, with your knowledge of ingredients and products that will work best for their condition. And then as the weeks and months go on, you might even have to tweak that a little bit.
Sure.
That is the name of our game. That's what we do as estheticians, right?
Yeah, no, that's such a great point, Michelle. You know, the best sunscreen is the one somebody will wear, and it's so important to continuously check in as the esthetician, because things can change really quickly with rosacea.
Yeah, rosacea is so fickle, right? It's mm-hmm. so unpredictable. And still to this day, after all of these years of me being in this industry for over 35 years, we've come a ways, but we still, you know, doctors will still say it's idiopathic.
It's frustrating.
Hypothesize it is autoimmune and this is what triggers it. But if you were to say, 100% without a shadow of a doubt, really, really, really can't do that. But the good thing is there's lots of treatments you can do for your clients, right?
Yeah.
There's so many great product lines that make products for rosacea, like with what you use, Tess, talking to them about a healthy diet, making sure that they reduce their stress and inflammation in their body. That's a really, really good start.
Yeah, definitely make sure you have a home care routine and at least understand the basics of what could trigger it. Michelle, we can edit this out if you don't have the answer, but I'm just curious to ask you, are there medications you do know about you would be comfortable touching on a little bit for those more extreme cases? Of course, people who already are doing all of these things, but are there options?
So for medications, what most of the doctors that I work with use and have been using as far as, you know, prescription for many, many years is Metrogel, which is an antibiotic, but it also helps to reduce the redness in the skin. And that kind of seems like the go-to for a lot of the doctors. And when I ask patients that come in that already have rosacea or have had rosacea, what are you using? It seems to be Metrogel. I can't say that's the gold standard, but it kind of seems to be the go-to for most doctors. And that's kind of a good starting place. And, if that doesn't really, or other antibiotics as well, and if that doesn't really clear it up or at least give the patient some relief, then they'll come in with lasers. You know, they'll attempt to use lasers. What we usually do as the estheticians is talk to the clients about skincare ingredients, do facials just to keep the skin clean and clear, prevent congestion in the follicles, use green LED, use masks that are very anti-inflammatory in nature. And that's kind of the best way just to sort of keep it in control. But for most of the doctors and most of the patients that I work with, they're on Metrogel.
Yep. My mom just got diagnosed too, and they gave her Metrogel.
How is that working for her?
We'll see. I think she likes it so far. I've also heard, I think this is a little bit newer, but I've heard doctors are prescribing beta blockers to address adrenaline. Have you heard about that?
Right. And high blood pressure.
Yeah.
Which could also, if someone has high blood pressure or other adrenaline issues, I've heard that too, beta blockers, which doesn't just help the issue, right? Whether it be high blood pressure or whatnot, but also helps to reduce the redness in the skin, is kind of like a byproduct of what it does. Mm-hmm. It's a good positive side effect.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. And even low dose Accutane or micro doses of Accutane are being prescribed for rosacea. So it's interesting to see what's becoming available. I'm really curious if they are going to have a more concrete answer sometime soon about rosacea.
Yeah, and it's like most autoimmune disorders, since it is falling under lately the autoimmune disorder category, you know, there's not really a cure. It's like with my hypothyroidism, there's just treatment. And totally. Even with treatment, ongoing treatment, it's, you know, my thyroid's high, it's low, mm-hmm. it's bouncing around. It's never really doing, it's really hard to control.
I'm with you. It's so tough.
You know how that is. But
sure
having this knowledge and just really developing a very soothing treatment, mm-hmm. and having those products there for your client to purchase and having them be consistent. And if they do have any questions or if maybe something is not working right for them, to tell you, right, their esthetician as soon as possible, so you can kind of get them back on track so they don't fall off track too much.
Great point. Yeah, so you can help course correct. I think it's same with acne. There's such a fine line between treating it effectively and overdoing it. So I think that's like the unspoken hard task on estheticians to find that middle ground. And it is often in the beginning, like doing a dance with your clients. So that's why you want that open communication. You want to stay in touch. You want to follow up. You want to check in on them when they are introducing actives and even weeks and months in, so you can adjust if needed. But yeah, great, great points, Michelle.
Yeah, adjustment is part of what we do, right? Because with the skin, you know, it and the body, and you just, you know, everybody is different. And, you know, I've had clients that have been great with their acne treatment for years and then maybe change medication or are now on hormones or are now off hormones or some kind of a shock to the body, right? The body senses it as a shock and the body is not as balanced as it was. And, you know, they have breakouts again. So that, and letting the client know that this can happen, you know, up front, that these are the things that can happen, and always setting realistic expectations and making sure your clients have realistic goals and trying to attain those goals, but letting them know too, it could take some time.
Right.
It doesn't happen overnight.
No. And
being diligent.
Yes. I feel like that's so, so huge to mention, Michelle. And, you know, it's like we all want a cure. We want an instant fix. And the way things are nowadays, we just expect that immediate solution.
Instant gratification.
Instant gratification is the word
and
I'm looking for.
The body doesn't always want to follow.
No. And so I think even understanding, like for acne, it could take from 3 to 5 months to a year to get things under control. That's realistic. And with rosacea too, it can take some months. And I really appreciate that you mentioned that for estheticians, because I think we can feel so badly, especially if our clients are suffering. And of course, you want to give them the best possible result. But there can be up and down, and it doesn't mean you are failing as the esthetician, and it may not mean that the client is doing something wrong either. It is just kind of this cyclical nature of these inflammatory conditions.
Right. And that is why it's so important. And also it's great that you have the treatment room test, because I think, you know, it's essential. It's crucial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The estheticians know the physiology, anatomy of the skin. They know the ingredients, the products, and they all kind of go together as a puzzle piece. Because if we really don't have that knowledge, right, that ground knowledge, we're not going to be able to really target the treatments. It's going to be kind of like a shooting in the dark or hit or miss. You're just kind of grasping at this and that, but really having an understanding of the skin and these ingredients and different products and procedures that will work, and letting the client know, you know, setting those expectations up front so that they don't become frustrated or think, well, I've had one treatment and my skin is still red or I still have breakouts. And what I do a lot for my clients, you know, is I'll write out a 6-month treatment plan. What we're going to do today, next month, you know, out 6 months. A year is a little long, but 6 months. So that we can stay on track. And, you know, as that month comes up and they come back in for the next treatment, you may have to tweak that plan a little bit if you see that you have to tweak it. But at least you have a plan and they feel secure with that. And they know that they're in good hands because you have a plan. You know where you're going.
Somewhere. Yeah, that is really the key, because there's the side of treating the skin and the skill involved with treating the skin. And then there's like this mental game. There's a psychological component of what your client is going through every day at home and when they see their skin. So if you can indicate you're looking ahead, you have a plan, it does make people feel secure. And that's what we want. We want our clients to know they can depend on us and we are the go-to resource for them.
That's very important, right? So it's not just about treating the skin. And I know where, unless you are, you know, a psychotherapist, maybe not a psychotherapist, but just there to listen to your client and listen to what they're saying and really, really listen to them. Because you can hear a lot and understand a lot when you're really listening to what they're saying about how they feel about, you know, their skin or their products or anything else, you know, whether they just want to tell you about, you know, just kind of release the stress of the world while they're there in the treatment room, you know, be there for them. And I think that really means a lot to your clients.
Totally. Yeah. Let them let it out, because there can be, again, a lot that comes with going through these conditions. It's not easy. So yeah, best not to, you know, ever get defensive or create walls. You want to really instill that open communication and understanding and listening to your client, like Michelle said.
Yeah, I think that is really important too. That's a really big piece of it. So yeah, I think that's great. I do teach in my acne class, rosacea as well. It's based on acne, the four grades of acne. But in that, we do go over rosacea and give some treatments. But yeah, I was going to say too, Tess, after the extractions and, you know, maybe the lymphatic drainage, then you could use a very soothing mask, right? A serum, and of course a sunblock. And make sure that you reschedule your client for 3 or 4 weeks down the line and let them know if they have anything going on or maybe something's not working right or product's not working right. Don't wait for 3 or 4 weeks until you come back. You know, you can contact me, because we want to kind of, you know, nip it in the bud and get this taken care of before then.
Yeah. Well, amazing, Michelle. I was going to mention that course that you did mention. I think that's where I first kind of learned about rosacea. And I remember vividly, like, the case study pictures that you show. That was really illuminating for me. I still remember that, even though it was years and years ago.
it was probably traumatic, because those pictures were kind of one end of the harsh. But yes, that, and a lot of people get acne and rosacea confused. They're totally two different conditions, right? Acne, rosacea is the inflammation of the capillary, and acne is the inflammation of the hair follicle. But you can have both going on at the same time, which makes it even more difficult to treat. That's why in the acne class, I also have rosacea wrapped up in that as well.
Yes, I have a strong opinion on that thought that we hear so often, that rosacea, acne, they're the same. They're just treated the same.
No. Totally different entities.
Completely different.
Inflammatory tissues, right? Mm-hmm. So they're different, and you need to understand the conditions and then treat them differently. Sometimes they come together, and you're going to need to treat the acne, clear the follicles, because every, you know, pustule and every sebaceous cyst, which is just a deeper pustule, starts with a clogged follicle. So you've got to clear that first. At the same time, if they've got rosacea, you've got to keep in mind that you don't want to overdo it or overinflame or cause, you know, damage to the skin. So that could be kind of a tricky balance.
Yes. Well, Michelle, thank you so much. I want to be respectful of your time.
Absolutely. I love to be here with you, Tess, talking to your followers. Absolutely love it.
Where can we find you, you know, to take your classes or to just connect with you?
Yeah. So if you have any questions, you could always email me. I know, Tess, you'll put that in. You'll put that out there for them. And you can also go to Concepts Institute, and there are lots of classes, both live in studio, we're back again, live in studio, and also on Zoom. So if you take it on Zoom, you still get a really good class. The Zoom classes come with a demonstration video, and you always have that demo video to refer back to, so you can practice on your friends and family before your clients. You can check all of the different classes there, whether it being acne or rosacea, anti-aging, anti-hyperpigmentation. There are a bunch of them, a bunch of clinical classes that you can check out. And if you have any questions, you know, please feel free anytime to contact me.
Thank you, Michelle. That is so generous. And we just appreciate you so much. I hope everyone really enjoyed this episode. It was almost like a little rosacea class. Please share. If you feel like this episode was helpful, please share with a friend or a classmate. Be sure to tag me on Instagram at @mysdtessa. And thank you, Michelle, for joining.
Thank you, Tess. Always love to be here with you. Anytime.
Thank you.